Some say Christopher Thomas was abused by the justice system. Thomas was 14 years old when he was convicted to 40 years in prison for his involvement in a non-lethal shooting.
Chris Thomas and Chris Butts were involved in an armed robbery at a pawn shop. The two other young men involved were older. The owner of the pawn shop was shot in the shoulder. Chris Thomas and Chris Butts were apprehended by police.
A group of students at Kennesaw State University reported on that story. They used virtual reality, among other things, to tell about Christopher Thomas's experience in Georgia's criminal justice system. Here to talk about this project is Leonard Witt. He's the executive director of the Center for Sustainable Journalism at Kennesaw State University. Good morning.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And also with us is one of Leonard's journalism students, Anne Ondieki. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
It's good to have you as well.
Thank you very much.
This conversation is another installment of our occasional series, Lessons from Left Field. That's where we highlight unique courses that are taught here in Georgia. So, Leonard, let's examine what makes this course unique. In what way do you use virtual reality for journalism?
Okay, so this was underwritten by the Online News Association. We got a nice grant for a challenge grant in journalism education. And what we wanted to do is figure out how we could get youth voices heard and their stories told and save their anonymity. So we came up with the idea of let's use virtual worlds and avatars to tell the story. Now, when Christopher Thomas came in, things changed a little bit, but that was a central idea. And the ONA liked it so much that they gave us this grant.
Okay, so then, Anne, you were doing journalism for years before you ever took this class, correct?
Yes, I did.
So how was this process different? What changed when you added the virtual reality into it?
It gave me a new understanding of what the virtual reality was. So it broadened my perspective as a student that, like Leonard said, to be able to protect the identity of minors, we are able now to present their stories in a different way.
Because it looks like The Sims a little bit. It's just a created character.
It does, but it's very similar almost, actually. You use all the same techniques if you were out on the field running around live and, you know, using a camera like you would use on GPB TV, except you're doing it all in virtual world. So the students who do this, they have to create, first of all, the avatars. Then they worked with Gwinnett Ryder Sinclair, and we got to mention her because she's the expert in this. And then she showed them how to build sets. So for one of the things we did, they built a whole set of 5th and Ab Street in Chicago, and it looks exactly like the street. And sometimes when you look at the real street that we built from Google Earth, you can't tell the difference between the avatar virtual world street. And the characters run. We have different angles. They talk. We, you know, do voiceover. So it's really kind of amazing. And our work right now, frankly, is still a little primitive because we're just starting it. But the possibilities of this are going to be remarkable because even when you watch an avatar, you still get the sense that it's a real thing, even though it's a cartoon character. That kind of disappears in your mind, and your mind plays a little trick on you.
And how does it change the journalism itself? Did you find you had a different understanding of the story after having to, as Leonard was explaining, recreate sets and try to create it in a 3D world?
Yeah, besides just writing now, we went into just the basics of learning how to create the avatars. So it makes you like, it immerses you into the story, basically. Like you get in there and you're able to visualize, okay, this is the story that I have, and then you recreate it in the virtual world. So it was kind of very interesting trying to not only learn how to write the story, but now how to produce the avatars and tell the story in a different way.
So, Leonard, let's actually get into the basics of Christopher's story. It is a long one in which we can't retell the whole thing during this interview. But Christopher Thomas had been a foster kid. And I think in a certain way, this reporting that your students did is really about the school-to-prison pipeline, is it not?
It's that, and it's a lot more. It's really about the failing of a society. Here's a kid. He's abandoned at age 2. His mom's strung out on crack and in jail. He goes to his grandparents' house, but along with his other 4 or 5 siblings, and they can't take care of him. So he gets passed around to different foster care. Every time he goes into a foster care house, he acts very poorly. Because in his mind, if I act really bad, they're going to send me back to my grandparents, who I really love.
Back to his grandparents, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And so that's his life pattern. He's always getting in trouble in school. He gets passed around. I guess if you're around him, he's not a pleasant kid at that time. But he's still a kid. 12 years old, this is where the pipeline goes. He curses in a class. In the past, it would have been a principal worked with the kid, and maybe they get, if the right world, they get him a social work and everything else. But now you're in a school, and you have a special resource officer, which is a cop. The cop goes looking for him after he storms out of a class, passes him in the hall, and says, "What's your name?" And he gives his brother's name. Rather than saying Christopher, he says, he's 12. He says, "I'm Jarvis Thomas." That is a felony, and he gets charged with a felony for telling the cop,
giving false reporting to police.
So then the cop finally tracks him down and gets in an argument with Christopher. And rather than trying to defuse it, he gets Christopher in a chicken wing hold, which really hurts Christopher a lot. 12 years old, man. He starts cursing and he swears he's going to kill the cop. Terroristic threats,
felony,
and disrupting school. So he has these three, felonies. They send him off to a boot camp, which is the worst possible place.
This is under Zell Miller, which people may remember was an effort to do these kind of almost scared straight sort of programs.
Correct, which don't work. And although Zell said, don't tell me they won't work. I don't need a pointy head telling me they won't work.
Yeah, he rejected the statistics.
You give any kid a kick in the pants, they're going to be fine. So he rejected the statistics. And in, Christopher's case, it didn't work. So now Christopher has this record. They don't know what to do with him. They try and put him in hospitals. And finally, they send him to this woman's house, in another county. And what does she do every morning with these troubled kids who she's supposed to be taking care of? She locks him out of the house at 8 o'clock in the morning and doesn't let him back in until 5. So they fall in with this character called Rambo. He's in his 20s. Somehow collusion. Let's go rob a pawn shop. Christopher's unarmed. Tag along. He's an unarmed tag along. But one of the other kids, he's 15, and the older guy isn't there anymore. He walks in and they shoot the pawn shop owner.
They don't kill him. They shoot him in the shoulder.
Shoot him in the shoulder. Non-lethal, but they shoot him. And so they haven't been able to figure out what to do with Christopher for all of these years. The state hasn't figured out. Well, now they figure out exactly what to do with Christopher, and the judge figures, we're going to put you in a cage for the next 40 years.
Partly as a result, Anne, it appears that the judge used the earlier very serious crimes he was charged with at age 12 as justification for the 40-year sentence. Mm-hmm. Through your reporting on this, what do you feel like you discovered about the criminal justice system and how it handles minors?
Basically, I thought... my own thinking is that it wasn't the right way, but it was basically based on his history, according to what evidence was presented to him. Christopher was judged based on unfortunate incidences of the past. So basically, I don't think, in my own view, I don't think it was the right way, but the judge just passed the judgment, which I think was not right for Christopher.
Yeah.
Why was this, Leonard, the right story for what you were trying to teach these students?
Well, we were looking for actually a simpler story, and we ran into Steve Reba from, bless his heart, from the Barton Law Center at Emory, and he dropped on the students thousands of pages of records. And when we started to read them, we were like, how can you justify putting a 14-year-old who's been kicked around his whole life and putting him in a cage? And I use that term because that's where he is for 40 years. He's been in there for 17 years. If this had happened, this is like our own gulag. We take kids of color that we don't know what we're going to do with, and we shove them into prisons. Usually, nobody sees them. Nobody knows a word about them. They're hidden there, and they want them hidden away. Fortunately, we came across this, and we, our students, and they really were the hardest working students I've ever been around, 11 students, all of these pages of stuff, they put together this story, and they are going to expose, or at least let people know, that there is a human being who's been put in a cage and totally forgotten about from age 14, and if he stayed in there until he was 55 years old. this is an injustice, and I want my students, as reporters, to look at these kind of things and expose these injustices. Am I passionate about this? Guess what? Yes.
Apparently so. But, Anne, let's take it back. In the minute that we have left, let's take it back to the virtual reality. Let's say that you're working on a story in the future and you don't have virtual reality technology with you. Has this experience changed the way you might approach future stories?
Oh, yeah. Basically, if I encounter a story that I cannot tell, like, I don't have the pictures. I know now I can go tap into the knowledge that I gained through this class and be able to create a more compelling story through the virtual world. So it has exposed me a lot. The information that we were able to gather and the instructions given by Gwinnett writer Sinclair, as Leonard mentioned, have given me a new perspective of telling some very compelling stories.
So you just heard from Anne Ondiyeki. She is a Kennesaw journalism student, and Leonard Witt is the executive director of the Center for Sustainable Journalism at Kennesaw State University. Thanks so much to both of you.
Well, thank you for having us. And we really hope that people pay attention, jjie.org or GPB's site right here.
Yeah, that's
read
right.
About Christopher.
You can find the story at our website, gpbnews.org, and you can also see how they told this story with virtual reality.